Someone is coming. You hear it in the rumbling of the earth. The vibration of hoofbeats reaches you long before sight or sound. They've been cleaning the streets of Jerusalem for days, shoveling up muck, driving off urchins and beggars from the corners, polishing the metalwork on the gate until it gleams, getting ready. Soldiers have come knocking on doors, telling everyone to get out, line the streets, prepare to welcome him. You grumble, but you go. Better to lose a day's work than be caught in disobedience. They've thrown water wherever there is bare earth, but still the shuffling of the people's feet makes a cloud of dust rise and people cough and squint through the haze. The rumbling rises to a thunder. Trumpets join in, shrieking. And then there he is, riding into Jerusalem. He sits high above the crowd on the biggest horse you've ever seen, half wild, snorting and stamping. This is a horse trained to fight, a warrior's horse. He wears armor, polished to a painful shine. He bristles with weapons, mostly for show, but also to prove a point. He rules with the power of law, but he will use whatever means necessary. The sound of horseshoes striking the flagstones pierces your skull, an unrelenting hammering. The crier walks before him. Bow down and welcome your governor, Pontius Pilate. Leon, you stole my punchline. So power shows up in a lot of different ways. This story I've told about Pilate is one of the ways that power can look, the way many people expect it to look. Power held over others, the ability to force others to do your will. And we see this in politics, in disciplinary processes at school, in the police force, in the military. But that's not the only way that power shows up. On the same day, the historical record shows, that Pilate paraded into Jerusalem with a show of force, on the other side of town, a scruffy peasant bumbled into town on a baby donkey. A borrowed baby donkey. A piece of political theater mocking the pomp and ceremony surrounding the Roman governor. A different sort of power. There are so many ways that we can have and use power. And power is something that we all have, even the most humble, nonviolent of Mennonites. We all have power in different shapes and forms and amounts in different areas of our lives. Having thousands of Twitter followers is a kind of power. The ability to tell a compelling story, to write it down in a book, is power. A baby's cry is a powerful force on her parents. My dog is all of 15 pounds, and let me tell you, she gets her way so much because she has perfected the most piercing, obnoxious yelp. And my ability to fill or deny her needs is also a kind of power. Simply by being charming, knowing how to have a conversation, knowing how to appeal to others is a source of power. In this country, speaking English as a first language is a huge form of power. Chairing a nonprofit board is powerful, as is doing the bookkeeping, but you don't need to have a position to hold power. Knowing who to talk to on what committee gives you power to get your way with church council. Knowing who you need to have on your side to get a resolution passed is a form of power. Sending an important 60-page document only one day ahead of a meeting where everyone will have to vote to implement what is in that vast, rambling document is a way of using power. Bonus points if you know who did that. using Google Translate to interpret a church-wide survey rather than using an interpreter is a way of exercising power. We all have power, and denying that we have it is very dangerous. If we buy into the narrative that we are the humble, the quiet in the land, the peaceful, and that this means that, of course, we have no power, then we will ignore the ways that our power hurts and manipulates the world around us. Jesus is a very powerful dude. Don't let that humble donkey act fool you. He wields an enormous amount of power. Of course, he has that whole being God's son power and the power of performing miracles, etc. But he also has the power of storytelling, of public speaking, of speaking multiple languages because he can communicate with everyone he meets, the power of knowing intimately every part of his people's most sacred text. And don't forget, the first thing that he does upon entering Jerusalem is go straight to the temple and cast out all of the money changers and vendors. Jesus gets angry, and sometimes he uses his power in showy physical ways. But he usually uses his power in ways that we do not expect. So there's a story about a time that a group of religious leaders, people with a lot of power, drag a woman in front of Jesus. They say they caught her in the act of adultery. They want to test Jesus, so they ask him, "What should we do with her?" In the law, Moses told us to stone her. Now, what do you say? Jesus knows the law. They know that Jesus knows the law. The law says, yes, stone a woman caught in a sexual relationship outside of her marriage. The people are already holding stones in their sweaty, overeager hands, ready to execute justice, ready to let the stones speak violence for them. Of course, the law says you should also stone the man, too. After all, as they say, it takes two to tango. So these people who dragged the woman here, they're already exercising their power in a particular way by only bringing the woman. Jesus would be within the law to say, yes, stone her. That's what the law says. He has the power to do that. They're giving him that power. And that is not what he does. Instead, he squats down in the dirt and starts drawing in the earth. The people squirm and shift around him. Teacher? Did you hear us, teacher? Let any who is without sin cast the first stone. And they look at each other and look away in shame. The stones fall from their hands one by one as they turn and walk away. Mercy. 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 Jesus uses his power to offer mercy. He still has power. He doesn't pretend he doesn't, but he aligns his power with the needs of the most vulnerable. As Jesus rides into Jerusalem on the little donkey, his friends and followers shout and sing, making a whole lot of noise. When some of the Pharisees tell Jesus to shut their disciples up, he says, "I tell you, if these were silent, the very stones would cry out." Now, I'm sorry to tell you, but Jesus didn't write a lot of his most quotable lines. This one comes from the book of Habakkuk. It's one of the Hebrew prophets. Now, if you forgot that this book of the Bible exists, don't worry. I was telling my husband about this, and I had to say the name three times and spell it, and he was still like, "No, I've never heard of that." So Habakkuk is one of the prophets. He's in with the minor prophets with like Hosea and Amos and Zephaniah and Haggai and all those fun names to say. It's this slim little book. It's just three chapters. You can probably read it over your coffee after church, and maybe you should, because it's some powerful stuff. So it was likely written when the threat of invasion by the Babylonian Empire was on the horizon. And the author does not mince words as they condemn the power of empire that overwhelms, displaces, and replaces. Wealth is treacherous. The arrogant do not endure. They open their throats wide as Sheol. Like death, they never have enough. They open their throats wide as Sheol, like death, they never have enough. That's the wealthy and the arrogant, by the way. And then the text speaks directly to those who hold power over. This is a long section. Because you have plundered many nations, all the survivors of the people shall plunder you. Because of human bloodshed and violence to the earth, to cities and all who live in them. Alas for you who get evil gain for your houses, setting your nest on high to be safe from the reach of harm. You have devised shame for your house, cutting off many peoples. You have forfeited your life. The very stones will cry out from the wall, and the plaster will respond from the woodwork. Alas for you who build a town by bloodshed and found a city on iniquity. Wherever there is evil, injustice, and greed, the earth itself will know. The stones quarried from the mountains, cut into blocks to found a city on a lust for violence and wielding power over others, the stones will cry out in judgment. God will not fail to notice those who exercise power over the vulnerable, those who use their power for their own gain. The stones will cry out. So, Pilate had power, Jesus had power, and we have power. How do we use our power? Whatever shape or size or amount we have, how do we use it in a manner that aligns with God's way of power with? I think of the young white girl who hopped a fence to stand in front of a black teen as to protect him as the police in riot gear moved towards him. Or I think about in Cairo when the Christian protesters held hands and surrounded their Muslim comrades at prayer. And I think about way less flashy ways of using power, like writing transparent policy and ensuring everyone in the congregation knows how decisions are made and where to find records of that process. I think about the power that I have as a chaplain at a hospital. On the one hand, I can't get anyone more pain meds or answer any medical questions. I can't even get anyone a glass of water in case they're not supposed to have that. On the other hand, I am healthy. I can get up and walk out of the room. I have spiritual and moral authority as a member of the clergy, and I represent the hospital, a powerful institution. And I think about an elderly woman that I visited in the hospital a few weeks ago. She had been there for a month and a half, enduring a battery of tests that showed no conclusions, and she was done. She was ready to just walk out that door, AMA, against medical advice, and just give up. She was at the lowest point that she had ever been at. She felt utterly powerless and wanted to take back her power over her own life by leaving. Now, everyone around her was invested in getting her to stay in the hospital to be patient. And I had to choose, how was I going to use my power? Would I add to the weight of my authority to the voices telling her what to do? Or would I use my power to help her claim her own power and her agency? And so I was able to sit next to her and hold her hand and rub her back and acknowledge her frustration and her pain. I was able to nudge her to call her family and listen to her process what the doctors were telling her. And in the end, affirm her as she made her decision to stick it out a few more days. So what power do you have? I want you to think about that for a moment. And know that you can have a lot of power in one area of your life and less power or no power in others. It's not cut and dry. Power is very complicated. But where are the places where you have power? You don't have to answer, just think about it. And then where are there places where you use power over others? And where are there places in your life where you align your power with the needs of others, with the needs of the more vulnerable? Are there ways, large or small, that you can do this just a little more every day? Aligning your power with the needs of the vulnerable can feel huge and it can feel small. It can mean the world in the moment and it can go unnoticed. My prayer for us all today and every day is for us to humbly recognize our own power and to own it, not hide it, and to consciously use it with humility to align with and empower the vulnerable. May it be so.